Psalm 104, verses 5 to 26 from the NIV. He set the earth on its foundations. It can never be moved. You covered it with the watery depths, as with a garment. The waters stood above the mountains. But at your rebuke, the waters fled. At the sound of your thunder, they took to flight. They flowed over the mountains. They went down into the valleys, to the place you assigned for them. You set a boundary they cannot cross. Never again will they cover the earth. He makes springs pour water into the ravines. It flows between the mountains. They give water to all the beasts of the field. The wild donkeys quench their thirst. The birds of the sky nest by the waters. They sing among the branches. He waters the mountains from his upper chambers. The land is satisfied by the fruit of his work. He makes grass grow for the cattle and plants for people to cultivate, bringing forth food from the earth. Wine that gladdens human hearts, oil to make their faces shine, and bread that sustains their hearts. The trees of the Lord are well watered, the cedars of Lebanon that he planted. There the birds make their nests. The stork has its home in the junipers. The high mountains belong to the wild goats. The crags are a refuge for the hyrax. He made the moon to mark the seasons, and the sun knows when to go down. You bring darkness, it becomes night, and all the beasts of the forest prowl. The lions roar for their prey and seek their food from God. The sun rises and they steal away. They return and lie down in their dens. Then people go out to their work, to their labor until evening. How many are your works, Lord? In wisdom you made them all. The earth is full of your creatures. There is the sea, vast and spacious, teeming with creatures beyond number, living things both large and small. There the ships go to and fro, and Leviathan, which you formed to frolic there.
We're looking at two questions. Whose earth and whose responsibility? And we've heard read some verses from Psalm 104. And verse 24 says this: How many are your works, Lord? In wisdom you made them all. The earth is full of your creatures. Psalm 104 pretty much answers the question, whose earth? We often use the verse, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. It is God, the Creator, who made the earth and made every living thing on the earth, that flies above the earth and that is in the sea and lives in the earth. God made it all. It is God's world, God's earth. So that was pretty easy. The answer to question one in just 1 minute. So that only leaves question two. This could be a very, very short message. So if it is God's earth, whose responsibility is it? And to find an answer and explore this, we go back to the beginning. The beginning of creation and the beginning of the Bible in Genesis chapter 1. And beginning at verse 27, it says this: So God created humankind in his image. In the image of God he created them, male and female he created them. God blessed them, and God said to them, Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. God said, See, I have given you every plant-yielding seed that is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food. And it was so. God saw everything that he had made, and indeed, it was very good. So right at the very beginning, God gives some instructions to the humans that he has created about the earth. I just want to underline what they are. He said to Adam and Eve, the first humans, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." So I wonder what God meant when he said that. Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Have we now filled the earth? Have we fulfilled this command? Then God says to them that they should subdue the earth. What does it mean to subdue the earth? And he goes on to say, have dominion over all the living creatures. So what does it mean to have dominion? To have dominion over the living creatures. What responsibility does that place upon us? And then he says, I have given you every plant-yielding seed and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. Does this mean that God intended us to be vegans? Well, there are some questions here in terms of our understanding of what these words actually mean and what God meant for us to do. I'm not going to go into detail about these. I've put some questions in the notes for life groups, so if you're in a life group, you'll be able to discuss these and come to your own conclusions. If you're not in a life group at Frimley Baptist Church and you'd like to join one, then get in touch with the office and they'll be happy to arrange that for you. Often these verses in Genesis are summed up in the idea of stewardship, that we are stewards of what God has created, that we have a responsibility to look after and care for what God has given us. So if we have a responsibility for God's earth, then how are we doing? Here's a recent article from the Guardian newspaper with the headline, "World fails to meet a single target to stop destruction of nature, UN report. Humanity at a crossroads after a decade in which all of the Aichi goals to protect wildlife and ecosystems have been missed." It goes on and says, "The world has failed to meet a single target to stem the destruction of wildlife and life-sustaining ecosystems in the last decade, according to a devastating new report from the UN on the state of nature." Failed to meet a single target. It seems perhaps that we don't take our responsibility for the living creatures that God has made very seriously. Here's another recent report from The Guardian with the heading, "Humans exploiting and destroying nature on unprecedented scale report." And it goes on and says, "Wildlife populations are in freefall around the world, driven by human overconsumption, population growth and intensive agriculture, according to a major new assessment of the abundance of life on Earth. On average, global populations of mammals, birds, fish, amphibians and reptiles plunged by 68% between 1970 and 2016, according to the WWF and the Zoological Society of London." I just want to draw your attention to two words in this article: population growth. I'm going to come back to that subject a little later. Here's another article from The Guardian, dated 30th of September 2020, with the headline, 40% of world's plant species at risk of extinction. Race against time to save plants and fungi that underpin life on Earth, global data shows. It says 2 in 5 of the world's plant species are at risk of extinction, as a result of the destruction of the natural world, according to an international report. We would not be able to survive without plants and fungi. All life depends on them, said Professor André Antonelli, the Director of Science at the Royal Botanical Gardens, Kew, in the UK. RGBQ led the report, which involved 210 scientists from 42 countries. The report mentions that not only is plant life important for food, but it's also important for as a source of medicines. So if we're not doing too well with the living things that God made, how about the earth itself? Another recent Guardian article had the headline, "Satellite images show rapid growth of glacial lakes worldwide. Number of glacial lakes rose by 53% in 1990 to 2018 to reveal impact of increased meltwater." So that's the increased meltwater from glaciers as they melt around the world due to increasing temperatures. And another recent article with the headline, "Northern Hemisphere breaks record for hottest ever summer." This summer was the hottest ever recorded in the Northern Hemisphere, according to US government scientists. The new record surpassed the summers of 2016 and 2019. Last month was also the second hottest August ever recorded for the globe. The numbers put 2020 on track to be one of the five warmest years. If you follow the news on these subjects, you'll find a constant stream of different reports coming out, showing how the human race is affecting the world around us, showing us how good or bad we are as stewards of what God has given us, His earth and all that is in it. So if we are stewards of God's world, how are we doing? Well, it seems perhaps not too well. Which leads to the question, why do we treat the world in the way we do? If God has given us instructions, why is it that we're not following them, even if it might be to our own detriment? And what can we do to change the situation for the better? Tearfund's leaflet, Understanding Poverty, has an interesting illustration that can be quite helpful, talking about broken relationships as a result of the fall. So in Genesis chapter 1, as Adam and Eve disobey God, this is what we call the fall. Their disobedience breaks their relationship with God. But it also breaks other relationships as a consequence of the fall. Relationships with others, relationships with ourselves, and our relationship to wider creation. The result of this is selfishness, greed, disempowerment, injustice, equality, conflict, and disasters, which are the things that produce spiritual, social, and material poverty. Just want to highlight here selfishness and greed. It seems to me that it's selfishness and greed that causes disempowerment, injustice, inequality, conflict, and disasters. Although we talk about natural disasters, the effects of natural disasters are often made worse by selfishness and greed. Where, for example, in earthquakes, buildings collapse because people who built them have cheated and have saved money to make money for themselves by using inferior materials, causing increased injuries and deaths. There are many other examples of how selfishness and greed make the impact of natural disasters worse. But it's also selfishness and greed that has an impact on wider creation. And this impact on wider creation in itself has a big impact on material poverty around the world. It is usually the rich nations of the world who benefit from what's going on in the destruction of the wider creation, and who benefit from the poverty of others around the world. The Bible tells us that the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. So what can we do that might make things better? Well, I think the place to start might be that we need to take our responsibility seriously and make a conscious effort to make a change and a difference. And the place to start is by understanding what is happening. You may have seen this recent programme on the BBC with David Attenborough, Extinction: The Facts. If you missed it, I think it's still available on iPlayer and on the BBC website. And on the BBC website, they also have various clips from the programme, including one, Extinction: The Facts in 6 minutes, in case you don't have time to watch the whole programme. So this might be a good place to start, to get the facts. But there are different opinions about this programme. Here's one opinion from Ross Clark, written in The Spectator. He writes, "It is shocking that the BBC can have allowed such one-sided green propaganda onto our screens without putting issues of human development and the natural world into proper context. But then David Attenborough has become a Greta of the Third Age. No one dares question what he does because he is a national treasure. Someone at the BBC needs to pluck up the courage." That's one view of the programme, which was supposed to be about the facts. Here's another view from The New Scientist. They write, "Loosely hooked to a major UN biodiversity report published last year, which found that the survival of 1 million species was at risk, Extinction: The Facts is a whistle-stop tour of our destruction of nature. A stellar cast of academics and experts from NGOs tell the story of a decline in mammals, plants and fish that Attenborough says isn't just disturbing, it's deeply tragic." Their whole piece on the programme is far more positive than Ross Clark's in The Spectator. If I go back now to the earlier article from The Guardian that mentioned population growth, where it said, "Wildlife populations are in freefall around the world, driven by human overconsumption, population growth and intensive agriculture, according to a major new assessment of the abundance of life on Earth." Contrast this view with this article from George Monbiot, also in The Guardian, with the heading, "Population Panic Lets Rich People Off the Hook for the Climate Crisis They Are Fueling." He writes, "The formula for calculating people's environmental footprint is simple, but widely misunderstood. Impact equals population times affluence times technology. I equals PAT. If we had the population of 500 years ago, around 500 million, and it were composed of average UK plane passengers, our environmental impact would probably be greater than that of the 7.8 billion alive today." He points out in the article that the poor people of the world, who make up the vast majority of the population of the world, have very little affluence or technology. Therefore, although their population might be large, their other two multipliers are small, and therefore they have far less impact than those of us who live in rich countries of the world. So there can be differing views about different aspects of these things. So where's a good place to start? A good place to start might be with Tearfund, who have a lot of resources and information available. So you could join their reboot campaign, which is about what kind of world do we want post-COVID. Do we want a world that prioritises the poor and tackles the climate emergency? You might like to look at some of their other resources, or you might like to join them in prayer. Prayer is always a good start. Finding out what God's doing and getting involved in that is always a good place to start too. And their action blog doesn't just include latest stories about people around the world, but it also has helpful tips. You could read their leaflet Understanding Poverty, which I mentioned earlier, or you could look at their Bible study on biodiversity in the Bible. All of these things are available free via the Tearfund website. So what can we do? We can get informed, we can pray, and we can also act. We can do something. Here's another article, this time from the Independent newspaper, with the heading, More than 1,200 landfill sites at risk of spilling into sea on UK coastline, which obviously can potentially lead to pollution. And the article itself mentions some landfill sites that are already being exposed because of erosion by the sea. So a place to start with action might be to consider our own lifestyle and where we spend our money and what impact it has. So if we think about the energy we use or the technology we have, by technology I don't just mean mobile phones and computers, but what about white goods? What about the cars that we drive? Also to think about the food that we eat and the clothing that we have. Here are some interesting questions to consider. How is it made? Where does it come from? How long does it last? Do you recycle it? How much do you waste? It's easy to think that the problem is large, and that there's nothing that we can do that will make a difference. But if every Christian in every rich country of the world made small changes to their lifestyle, to the things that they buy and the things that they use, this would make a difference. Because it's the richest people in the world that have the biggest impact on it. There have been other recent articles in the newspapers about the amount of food wasted by the rich countries of the world, about the amount of precious metals that are now in landfill sites around the world that have come from technology, mainly mobile phones. Everything that ends up in a landfill site eventually affects the earth that we live in and that God has given us. So what might we change in our own lives? What could we change in our own lives? What will we change in our own lives to make us better stewards of what God has given us? The earth that we live in and the creatures that are in it, and the plants that are in it too. Here are some verses to consider as I close. From James chapter 2 and verse 14. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? The Christian faith is a faith, but it also requires action. These words from Matthew 7 verse 12. A verse that we looked at over the summer with the words of Jesus. So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets. And these words from James chapter 4 and verse 17. If anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin for them. So what might we do to be better stewards of God's world? What could we do to be better stewards of God's world? And what will we do to be get better stewards of God's world.